Steve, Chris Holt here. Just driving back from Canmore after an epic weekend of bike packing. I took my friend Holly up onto the High Rockies for her first backcountry overnight bike pack. I hope she's still my friend. We got about 20 kilometers up into the trail and we hit maybe 25k. And we hit intense snow still. We were post-holing for about 15 kilometers, portaging our gear. It was pretty intense. We finally popped out at Chester Lake after about 12 hours of riding. And the weather was rainy and snowy and snow pellets and sunny, and it was just crazy, three-season type of a day. And set up camp in the backcountry and woke up with an intense snowfall overnight. So we decided to head out and not to finish the High Rockies. She had enough of the High Rockies. And so we headed back to camp where we did the West Spray Lakes Trail. Ended up encountering a blow down there for about a kilometer and a half of carrying our bikes again. And that, it's always an adventure, so much fun, prepares you for the next ride. Over the course of the weekend, there was lots of moments where I thought, I should leave Steve a voice message and just say, give him a shout out off of the trail, but there was so many times that we just stopped and you had to change your gear because the sun was out, and then, 20 minutes later it's raining and then the wind is blowing, and it was epic. So we had a great ride back, and I just was thinking about you and your discussion with Dion Clark and the memories from the epic. What a great conversation that was. I had lots of little laugh out loud moments because, the memories are still quite alive in my head. And I'm just so excited that the epic is going ahead this year. I've decided that I was going to do the BT 700, but with damn COVID, I wasn't able to do that again this year. So I've decided to take the first two routes out of Ryan Corey's bikepacking book, and I'm going to call it the RCCR 700, and route one, route two, and head out on Solstice, and give those, I'm going to do it solo and just give those two routes a go. Good luck to you, my friend, and congratulations on your new rig. That is just awesome. I love the fact that you got yourself a new bike. I think that is just golden. And the fact that you're going to race with it on the Epic this year, I'm going to be cheering you on. I'm going to be watching your dot. I'll be back from my trip by then. And just wish you all the luck. And, you've got such great energy. I just love listening to you and just being your friend. It's pretty cool, man. Take care and keep up the interviews. I myself love to listen to them, and I gain a lot of insight in so many areas of my life. It's just, it's comforting. Okay, take good care, and we'll talk to you later.
Trish Holt, thanks so much for that voice intro. Buddy. Thanks for that. I appreciate all your kind words, and I hope your friend is still talking to you. I saw the pictures of that route, that trip you guys took, and I was like, yeah, man, that's basically bike packing by immersion, just jumping in with both feet, post-holing through snow and rain and slop and shit. But you know what? Tell your friend that is the worst. Like, she's basically experienced the worst of it. Well, maybe not the worst of it, but the worst of it. I mean, next trip she goes on, it's going to be deluxe. And I think that's the thing about when you go out and push your limits in those ways, that you become maybe not ambivalent. Ambivalent's the wrong word. But when the weather challenges you, you're just like, just shrug, put on another layer, you know, put the hard shell on or whatever and just deal with it. So Dill, I hope everyone enjoyed that little voice intro and found it inspiring. It's like you just got to get out there and push your limits. And if you want to send me a voice intro, please do whip out your device, record me something, and send it to myback40podcast@gmail.com. I love getting them. I love hearing from people around the globe. And I think it just kind of connects the community. So please don't be afraid. Send me a voice intro. Don't be shy. It doesn't have to be about biking. Could be a comment on a podcast you heard, or a recommendation, or a gear recommendation, or just whatever's on your mind. I really appreciate it. So don't forget, myback40podcast@gmail.com. So I took the bike out for one last shakedown tonight. Kind of was moving some stuff around, packing it a little better, working on the balance a little bit. It was really a little front heavy, so I was kind of shunting some stuff back and forth, and I found a really good packing job. I think it's really good. Still lots of room for food. I actually was carrying food tonight, so I've got lots of excess room for food because of that massive frame bag by @coldbike. Doug Dunlop made up for me this wicked roll top frame bag that's custom to the bike because it was kind of weird. It's got some tube bends in it and stuff, but he did a fantastic job. And it's lace up too, which was rad. So kind of lacer on there. It looks awesome. Named the bike Timber. She's a beaut, all laced up in her frame bag. And she's riding awesome. Just the Rollingdale frame is just crazy. It's so compliant. Fully loaded, it's like you can go over like small to almost medium washboard and it's quite comfortable. It just really soaks it up. That in combination with the IDC K-Lite Revolution wheel set and with the dynamo hub, man, this thing's an RV. It's just crazy. I'm just so privileged to be able to have this equipment and have access to great makers, you know, around the globe. Kerry State in Australia, you know, Rollingdale Cycles, Dale Marchand in St. Albert, Alberta, you know, @coldbike. I'm surrounded by tons of makers, Thief and Bikepackers Foundry. They're just all over the place. And Shop Canada, man, I'm so pumped to be able to ride this setup. And and I'm doing it for the Masaka Cycling Club. So just quickly, the story, I didn't really want to tell anybody at first. I'm not sure why. Maybe I didn't want the accountability. Maybe it's because I was afraid I was going to fail, which, you know, whatever, is something to consider. But that's not really on my radar because I'm just basically riding bikes and, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to drag the bike across the finish line if I have to. But and as time went on, I was registering my spot and I was talking to Scott Morris because I always have trouble registering my spot because I really don't use it that much. I'm only really racing a couple times a summer and otherwise it just sits idle. But I told him kind of what I was doing. And I was like, so if I yo-yo, is it going to keep tracking me? And he goes, oh, well, you know, just make sure we'll put you as a yo-yo. Boom. And he entered it and he put it online. And then the dude that's Kenton, who's going to be shooting a film of the BC Epic, kind of reached out to me. He goes, so it's kind of, it slipped. And I went, yeah, I know. I gotta put it out there. So, and then I was thinking, well, I can use this as a great opportunity to raise money for the Masaka Cycling Club. So that's what this yo-yo is about. I'm going out, I'm pushing my limits. I want to represent the Masaka Cycling Club well, because those guys and girls and disabled youth out there are getting after it all the time on bikes. And the stuff, the obstacles that they are encountering in their cycling path are just, they seem insurmountable. And that's what's so important about this club is we need to support these athletes, get them notoriety, show the people, these athletes, and how hardcore they are, and support them with coaches and equipment and a clubhouse and e-training suite. It's so amazing. And these athletes are going to hit the world stage. I put money on it. We're going to see these people racing on the world stage. And I want to be a part of that. And I want you to be a part of that. So I'm trying to raise money, $1 per kilometer. You know, my goal is my goal is $2,000, for the 2000 K. It's actually, I think, 2100 K. That's the goal I'd like to hit. And we've had some support already and it's fantastic. And, I've raised a few $100 already and I haven't even started pedaling yet. And I want to thank you for those of you listening who listen to this and have kicked in to this awesome project. I thank you. And if you want to kick in, masakacyclingclub.com/donate, give what you can. Could be $1, could be $2, $5. every little bit helps, and $1 goes a long way in this country. So don't ever think that you're not giving enough, because like I said, $1, $5, whatever you can afford, will really help push these athletes up the ranks. And I thank you for that. So thanks so much for your support. Follow along. You can find me on Track Leaders. I'm registered. I'm the yellow dot with the SO on it. I'm going to be starting my individual time trial at 5 a.m. on the 24th, and I'm going to ride until I'm done. So what I hope to do is I'm going to put it out there. I'm hoping to do it in 7 days, and that's a big ask. The last time I finished it, it was in 4 days and 4 hours. I don't think I was in as good a shape. I had a lot of chamois issues, told the story before. I think I can do it faster. I think I can do it in 3.5 days. And I'm asking my body to do that. And, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So come along for the ride. Track Leaders, trackleaders.com, and then BC Epic 2021 is at the top. And while you're at it, check out the Tour Divide Classic at the bottom of that list. Check it out. There's some awesome shit going on there right now. Watching Jay Peterberry ride that route, and he's just got a smile on his face. Like, he's in such amazing shape right now, and he's killing it out there. So I've been having fun following him. And Robert Bigelow Rubens out there too, man. He's riding his bike. I think he's like in seventh or something like that, which is fantastic. And so I'm pretty pumped about all this. So yeah, head on over to Track Leaders. Follow me. Follow me here please subscribe, share, rate, and review the podcast. Also follow me on Instagram at myback40_podcast. And also follow the Masaka Cycling Club at Masaka Cycling Club on Instagram as well. Follow along and see what those athletes are up to, because it's pretty awesome. All right, everyone. I also just want to thank a bunch of people. I want to thank, and if I sound rushed, it's because I really want to get this podcast out. This one should have been out a while ago with Jen and Eric of the Log Driver's Waltz. But I had a bunch of conversations lined up, and right now I'm under the pressure because I really want to put one out before I go. So that's what this is all about. So, but I do want to thank Cycling 101 for the support of the podcast, for supporting me and the podcast. Ryan Draper at Cycling 101 has been with me since the beginning, and I love you, man. Thanks for all your support. You're a great mentor. You're a great, great coach, and I value our friendship. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And don't forget to use the promo code with Cycling 101. It's MB40, and it's going to save you 25% off a consultation. If you're not digging the training program you're on right now and you're not seeing the results, reach out. MB40 is going to save you 25% at Cycling 101. I also want to thank quickly Dynamic Cyclists. I haven't really been riding the bike that much. The only reason I rode tonight is because I had to shake the bike down, because I'm not sure. I only have a couple hundred K on it. Ordinarily, I wouldn't be riding, but I would be stretching, which I am doing, which I'm going to do as soon as I finish recording these intros. I'm going to go up and do some Dynamic Cyclist sessions. Super fantastic. I've been having a great, seeing some great progress in my hips. You know, it's slow and steady. You can't expect results right away, especially when you're as stiff as this dude right here. So definitely go out, give it a try, sign up. And if you use the code MB40, you're going to save 25% off of their programs at Dynamic Cyclist. And I can't recommend them enough. You're going to feel better on the bike. You're going to feel better just walking around. Like, once you just work 15, 20 minutes a day, just while you're watching TV, get on the floor. Don't sit in the fucking couch. Get on the floor and do some moves. Just stretch, move. And you know what else it does? It activates your parasympathetic nervous system. So it calms you down and it gets you ready for bed. It's great to do at night. Roll out the back, roll out the calves, you know, roll out the IT bands, do some stretching with Dynamic Cyclist. And then, you know, lay in bed, do some breathing. You know, maybe some 4-7-8, breathe in for 4, hold for 7, out for 8. You know, I'm really noticing my recovery being better after stretching, doing some breathing before bed. Yeah, check it out. I can't recommend it enough. Dynamic Cyclist, MB40 is going to save you 25% off. It's a no-brainer. Go and sign up now. I also want to thank Ancestral Supplements. I've been taking their supplements now for 2 or 3 months. And when I forget, I feel like shit. It's like, damn it, I forgot to take my supplements. So I really highly recommend them. The ones that I really dig the most is the collagen. I've found a lot of benefit in the collagen, obviously, with connective tissue, hair and nail growth, skin health. It's just fantastic. I can't say my hat barely goes on my head. My hair is so thick, but I do feel it in my joints. I've just noticed a general reduction in just overall inflammation, especially in my knees and hips. And collagen has been fantastic. The other thing I think has been really beneficial is the beef heart. I would recommend the beef heart and the blood vitality if you're thinking about picking up some ancestral supplements. The coenzyme Q10, CoQ10 that's in there. It just lower blood pressure, great vascularity, great circulation. I don't know what it is. I just feel good on their supplements. And what better way to get nose-to-tail nutrition than in small gelatin capsules? They freeze-dry, desiccate the material, and put it into that perfect little package. So if you want to go over to Ancestral Supplements, use the code MB40, and you're going to save 10%. I'd highly encourage going and checking it out and pairing it with ranchbox.ca. It's hard to find grass-fed beef, you know, locally in your town. You might find it here or there, but you can get it delivered right to your door with Ranchbox. They have a great number of different packages you can choose from, and you can subscribe. So, you know, if you have a big family and you're all consumers of meat and you know, you need that constant influx to your doorstep then, and you want grass fed, humanely raised meat, what better way to do it than with Ranchbox? And if you use the code MB40-10, you're going to save 10% there. So go to ranchbox.ca, check it out. And I can tell you right now, I'm bringing some beef and bison jerky with me that I made from Ranchbox. Took a pound of beef, pound of bison. You flatten it on a tray on parchment and put it in your oven. I have a dehydrate cycle on my oven. I'm lucky. So I dehydrated it for probably, it was 6 hours or 7 hours. And it gets kind of like, you know, it's cooked, but it's still kind of bendy. And then I cut it into slices. Then I hit it for about 20 minutes at 275 to cook it through. And it's delicious. Beef, bison, salt. It's all you need. Whole foods, easily digested. That's all you need. So yeah, please go over to ranchbox.ca, use the code MB40-10, and you're going to save 10%. Today on the podcast, I bring you Eric and Jen Betteridge of the Log Driver's Waltz. Jen and Eric Betteridge both grew up in active families and have always carried on leading an active lifestyle. They have both continued to enjoy adventuring by bike and like to see people getting out there on whatever bike they have. Ontario has so much to offer in terms of outdoor recreation, and that motivated this adventurous couple to develop a route that showcases some of the fantastic bikepacking in the province. They spent time out on the bike developing different sections and then eventually joined all the routes together, creating the Log Driver's Waltz, an 800-kilometer multi-day cycling route that traverses a vast variety of terrain in the Ottawa Valley and Outaouais regions of Ontario and Quebec. It was such a pleasure to finally connect with Jen and Eric. They have a ton of experience and they share a lot of their methods during this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. Before we get there, I'm going to play you out with a song, a cover of the Log Driver's Waltz by The Hidden Cameras. And they were gracious enough. I reached out to them recently and just asked if I could play their cover on the podcast, and they approved, and I'm super pumped. So this is The Log Driver's Waltz by The Hidden Cameras. And if you want to check out that band, head on over to thehiddencameras.com and check out their website. All right, and here we go. And right after that, we'll get to Jen and Eric.
Should ask any girl from the parish around what pleases her most from her head to her toes. She'll say, I'm not sure that it's business of yours, but I do like to waltz with a log driver, for he goes burning down and down white water. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. It's burning down and down white water. The log driver's waltz pleases girls completely. When the drive's nearly over, I like to go down and watch all the lads while they work on the river. I know that come evening evening they'll be in the town, and we all want to waltz with the log driver, for he goes burning down and down Whitewater. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. It's burning down and down Whitewater. The log driver's waltz pleases girls completely. Both my parents I've had to give away, and dance with the doctors and merchants and lawyers. Their manners are fine, but their feet are of clay. For there's none with the style of my log driver, for he goes burning down and down Whitewater. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. It's burning down and down Whitewater. The log driver's waltz pleases girls completely. I've had my chances with all sorts of men, but none is so fine as my lad on the river. So when the drive's over, if he asks me again, I think I will marry my log driver. For he goes burning down and down Whitewater. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. It's burning down and down Whitewater. The log driver's waltz pleases girls completely. Burning down and Whitewater, that's where the log driver learns to step lightly. It's burning down and down Whitewater. The log driver's waltz pleases girls completely.
So, good morning. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
How are things in your house with your... wife's sleeping away there still.
Pretty well. No, she got up just moments ago. It was a good timing. And yeah, she's been, she got accepted into an educational assistant program. So she's been studying hard. It's a very intensive program. Out here in BC, an EA basically helps kids with learning difficulties.
Right.
So not just assisting the teacher, but assisting, you know, kids with challenges. So, and she's going to be awesome at it. But the workload is just, it's just crazy, man. Like,
yeah.
So anyway,
Well, they're an integral part of the classroom. I was a classroom teacher for 29 years. And, so I know the importance of EAs working with kids. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it seems like more now than say when we were kids that, they're just trying to keep the classes more integrated with kids of all levels of ability. And I think that's really good because, you know, back in my day, I remember, you know, the kids would get whisked off to that other class, right, to that other room. And I think it's stigmatizing for some of those kids. Probably holds them back a little bit, you know. I don't know. What do I
A very different topic of conversation.
It is. It sure is. Yeah, education. Let's get into it. So yeah, log driver's waltz. You know, when I heard that, I remember that old TV Ontario ad. Do you remember that? The cartoon, the animated one?
Yeah, it's an NFB, NFB? Short. Yeah.
So good. It just like sprung in my head right away. And it's on, it's actually on YouTube. You can find it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So
there's a ton of covers of it. One of the best covers that I ever saw was a group called the Hidden Cameras, and we saw them up at the Black Sheep Tavern, which is actually on the corner of the route in Wakefield. And so they are definitely not the kind of band that you would think would sing the log driver's waltz. They describe themselves as gay folk punk.
Gay folk punk. What was the band name again?
The Hidden Cameras.
I'm gonna look them up.
So we were, you know, in the middle of this sort of really rowdy concert, and then all of a sudden they played the log driver's waltz.
Awesome.
And what's really cool is it's really like the Black Sheep is a really great live music venue in Wakefield, and it's got a patio and it's literally on the route. So, I was thinking about that the other day when we were riding, as how what like those three things coming together: the route, the log driver's waltz, and the Black Sheep. And The hidden cameras.
It's bad quality.
Yeah, I think that's the one. I looked it up. Yeah. I was trying to. It's quality it, one. You can get good yeah, quality. I'll
have to find it. Yeah. I better not do it though, because I'll.
Oh.
Is that the one?
Yeah. That's off their album.
I'll have to reach out to them. Because it'd be fun to open up the podcast with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will. I'll reach out to them for sure.
Yeah. They really were so energetic, incredible people.
That's
yeah.
awesome. Well, yeah. Man, it's been a while. We've been trying to connect for a while, haven't we? Like, it seems like months now that we've been trying to connect. So I'm super happy that we're finally sitting down and chatting.
Yeah.
And Eric and Jen, why don't we just start by, why don't you just tell me a bit about yourselves first? Like just some personal background, kind of where you were born. I read that you were both born in the Ottawa Valley.
Not quite correct.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in the Ottawa Valley. I let Jen talk first.
Shoot.
I'm the one with the Ottawa Valley born and raised. My mother is from Shawville, which is on the route on the Quebec side in the Pontiac, and my dad is from Renfrew, which is on the Ontario side, and it's on the route. And they met in Kingston, and I was actually born in Kingston, but we grew up in. I grew up in Ottawa, and so we have family. I have family on both sides of the river, and lots of family stories from all around the Ottawa Valley.
My mother grew up in Sherbrooke. She was born in Sherbrooke.
Huh.
I don't really know that side of the river very well, but do you speak French?
Yes. Yeah.
Nice.
No. As I not necessarily because I grew up here. I went to school in the Gaspé to learn French. My mom is from Shawville, and the Pontiac is a very Anglo area of Quebec, and Shawville is quite Anglophone. It's Irish. And
Scottish,
predominantly Irish, and very very Anglophone.
One of my biggest regrets is not learning French. I remember being so dismissive of it when I was a kid. You know, it was mandatory to take French, and I did better in French than I did in English, which is odd. But I wish I kept it. I wish I kept up with it and learned it, because it's, especially in Canada, it's so valuable. And then when you travel the world, you can use French in a lot of different places where you know, like Morocco and I knew enough when I was in North Africa to kind of like, I think I know what you're talking about. But, yeah, cool. Yeah. Growing up in the Ottawa Valley. How about you, Eric?
My parents moved us here from England when I was about five to Ottawa. And my dad's English, my mom's Canadian, and they totally embraced living here. And I actually spent a lot of my early years here, I think, with my parents driving down all these back roads in Lanark County because they were looking for a plot of land to buy and to live on, which we never did. The road always seemed to end at the dump, and every road we went down, there'd be a dump at the end. But we looked at properties up there. I think we canoed up in, as Jen's family did, up in Lanark. And so that was sort of early experience up there. But yeah. So I grew up here. I mean, I consider myself to be from the Valley, although I wasn't born here. And our kids were born here. So, and Jen's from here. So this is where we're from.
Oh, of course. You've earned it. You've been there more than long enough, I think, to say you're You're valley folk for sure.
So I guess that's.
And obviously, both come from a fairly athletic background, like athletic or active for the, you know, active families that I hear you paddled and whatnot. Is that kind of your experience growing up being outdoors?
Yeah, for sure. My parents love to canoe and cycle, and we did a lot of canoeing as a family growing up. We did a 17-day canoe trip in Algonquin Park. We were really pretty little, putting the canoes on the train and paddling across the park. Big, wonderful, adventurous trips, hiking the West Coast Trail, as young kids, and, hiking in Gros Morne and big adventures. And my parents continue to ride their bikes, and they walk with difficulty. So their hiking is limited, but they still go hiking. They do go hiking. Yeah, yeah. They went to they're bound and determined to create adventures as they become more limited. They still create their own adventures.
Moving water don't freeze. I've said that on this podcast a few times. Yeah. It's like being active is so important, especially when you get older. I've heard too many stories of elderly people falling and becoming incapacitated in some way, and then it's just to their demise, you know.
The body
needs to move. We're designed to move, and as soon as we stop. So yeah, good on them. How old are your parents, if you mind me asking?
They're mid-80s.
Wow, awesome. And are they riding regular bikes or e-bikes?
No.
See?
Bikes, so.
People out there listening, you don't need an e-bike. I'm not anti-e-bike, but damn it. You know, I see young kids out there riding e-bikes, and then here's your folks, 85 years old, and they're still, you don't need an e-bike. You just need to stay fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric fixed up his dad's bike.
Yeah, I just fixed up my dad's bike. My dad just had a complete knee replacement, and in 84 to 87, I worked out in Banff in a bike shop called Park and Pedal, which is now underneath a condominium, I think. But
yeah, no doubt.
But I had a Rocky Mountain Sherpa from 1985. Which I gave to my dad a number of years ago. So every time he takes it into the shop, they go, "Oh my God.
Do you want to sell it?"
I won't say where he lives, because I think it's probably worth more than I paid for it.
Yeah, I worked at a shop in Invermere, and someone brought in a specialized stump jumper, like Gen 1.
Right.
You know, they wanted it, a whole bunch of work done to it. And we're like, well, by the time you do this, that, and the other thing, it's going to be like $500-$600. And they ended up leaving it. And it's a window decoration. I think it's still in the window actually right now. It's an awesome bike. I love old bikes like that.
Yeah.
How about your folks, Eric? Are they as active? Are they still around?
My mother died about a year and a bit ago.
Oh, dude, sorry to hear that.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you very much. She was almost 91.
Awesome.
And my dad has been very active over his life. Well, my mom was too. A lot of northern canoe trips, like say Northwest Territories, and retracing fur trade routes and whatnot with some of his a little canoe club that was here, based here in Ottawa. Doesn't really exist anymore, as everybody's kind of gotten old, but. Yes, and got us out skiing and canoeing. And my dad actually didn't really like biking. He had to commute on a bike as a kid, and so he didn't really like biking. So, but then, and then around middle age, he started biking again and commuting, actually. And I think he really enjoyed it. And he's looking forward to getting back on the old Sherpa, you know. And so I was pretty excited to put new tires on it and make sure that it was had all its gears and that sort of thing. So I hope he gets out on it.
That's cool. I always like to hear kind of what people's backgrounds are, just to see if you know how much influence the family had. And it sounds like you guys were basically injected into the outdoors as children.
Yeah. And with our kids too. So
Yeah, we're working on that here as well. We have a pretty busy schedule. We're never together, my wife and I. So as soon as she's finished this EA program, it might be hopefully summer's off and be able to spend more time together, which I think is the ultimate goal for sure. That's awesome. So 80s. In the 80s, you were touring. And actually, let's talk about, I read in your background, or thanks for sending that. I was like trying to absorb a lot of that before the podcast. Touring versus bikepacking. It's kind of the same thing, right? Like, what's the difference, really?
I think it's a bit of a label. I think that every generation has to like come up with something that they're doing that nobody did before them, in a way. But I mean, I don't want to. I think there are some differences. I think typically you might want to. I find it tricky, and I don't. I want to draw a line, actually.
Yeah.
If one were to have to or need to draw a line, it would, and it still doesn't even really make any sense. It's the like on road, off road kind of thing. But really, it's you're still touring. You're just on a different surface.
Yeah, I think it's just that with bikepacking, your bags are very securely tied to your bike.
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
You know, these big
where the bikepackers. Separate from the tours.
But it's funny because it's all coming back because now racks are getting hot again, right? People want to run racks, and it's like, okay, well, it all comes around.
We both, did touring back in the day, so in the 80s. But I did some stuff that was with Jim Blackburn lowriders on the front of my bike that I probably wouldn't attempt doing with Jim Blackburn lowriders now. In fact, we broke them off a few times, that sort of thing. But that's just what you had, right? So I think it's whatever you have and whatever you ride on is the your bike packing, bike touring, biking bike, and whatever this is the surface.
Yeah, it's your adventure bike, right? And that's the thing too, is you could take that Sherpa out. You could tune that 30-year-old bike up, right? And still get a frame bag made for it and strap some stuff to wherever you can and take it out, right? It doesn't really matter what kind of rig you're riding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would kind of prefer to see people getting out on whatever they have and not worrying about a label as much as getting out. I mean, you probably do the same thing, and I listen to your podcast with Sarah and her dad. But we're always tinkering with the bags or the little tricks or whatever, and we're just all of us. I mean, we, the general bike packing population, we're always. If I did this, then I'd be a little faster, or that would be easier. I'd have a bit more space or whatever. But the point is that it's variations on a theme. And the theme being that we're getting on our bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just getting out, and doesn't matter what you have. I would say that if you wanted to get into it and your concern was where to put your money and you had whatever, a 30-year-old bike or a 10-year-old bike, I would forego getting a new bike and sink that your budget into having good gear and good bags, I think. Because I mean, the bike can be easily maintained and brought up to snuff to be able to go on an adventure with. But I think I would rather spend my money on good gear, like making sure you have the right survival gear to get out there. What do you guys think about that?
A good mattress and a good tent.
Yeah,
and something dry.
Yeah, and even it doesn't have to be fantastic gear. It can be pretty old tech, stuff. And the key is just getting out and not creating barriers to getting out, that you have to have the lightest, you know, a 3-pound tent or 1.5-pound tent or 1-pound tent. you know, as a summer trip, you don't need a whole lot.
No, yeah, definitely not. You can go so light. I find every year that I get a bit more experience, I go out and my bike is just skinnier and skinnier. Like, yeah. You know, what do you need?
High tech, but it is fun if you can. It's fun. The materials and designs are getting to be, you know, so light and so efficient and effective. It's really fun to play around with that, but I don't think it should be a barrier to getting out there.
We did a trip in fall of 2019 on hybrid bikes with 25-liter backpacks bungee corded to our bike racks or the rear racks, no panniers, and then sort of little handlebar bags. Because we were in Europe and we wanted to be able to leave our bikes community and just start hiking with our little packs. And, you know, it was, I guess that was bike packing because we had a bike and we had a pack.
and we were able to go on some pretty gnarly back roads.
Yeah. You know, like a hybrid bike, you know, it's got pretty big tires often. And so... But we were obviously limited, but we just worked within those limitations.
I don't think there's any one perfect bike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of debate over tire volume a lot, or, you know, people saving weight in tires by, oh, I'm able to go a bit narrower and then I'll forego the, I don't know who I was talking to the other day, but on a podcast, but I was just saying that's the last place that I skimp is my tires. And it's like, you know, even on a race I'm doing this summer, I was like, oh, should I go 2 or 2.25s? Like, no, I'm going 2.35s with a fast rolling tire with all the protection on it. And then once they're mounted up, I'll never have to worry about the rubber again. Yeah. They might be a bit slower on the pavement. Yeah. They might not have enough tread for some of the dirt, right? There's nothing perfect. You'll never find the perfect rig, I don't think.
Yeah.
So when you guys met, where did you guys meet? In Ottawa?
Well, it's an arranged marriage, actually.
What?
Our parents met at a party when we were 15 and 17, and they introduced us to each other.
It's not arranged. Was that the...
They arranged for car shuttling to the Carleton University pool to do kayaking pool sessions in the winter. And so we met doing that.
We didn't get married then though, so don't worry.
Oh no. Arranged marriage. Hey man, so did your parents arrange that? It's like, oh, I think Eric would really like this young lady, and kind of
we don't,
this is not the conversation.
The details are long gone.
but cool that you met someone you met each other and you share these interests, right? That's a great combination. And then that's, you know, had inertia through your married life and your adventure buddies now, right? And an adventurous family. And that's awesome.
Yeah. We do, you know, a lot of cross country skiing. And the kind of skiing we do is a lot like bike packing. You're carrying your stuff, and so you got to be efficient. You're going long distances usually, and you know, so you have to develop a system.
Yeah, and we are very fortunate to be able to go out together and do these big fun adventures together, and love the same kind of trip, because it's not everybody's cup of tea to carry all your gear and whether you're skiing or biking or canoeing, is to carry your gear and be out on extended trips, but it's something that we sure love together.
That's great. And what was your first bike tour together like?
First bike tour together.
Can't even.
Watch.
That, I think maybe one of our first bike tours together where it was down to Prince Edward Island. It was the year before they put the bridge in. And we wanted to go to Prince Edward Island and see it as an island. And so we took our mountain bikes down there. And we rode around looking for, well, I don't even know if we were intentionally looking for them, but we found a whole lot of roads that said, you know, closed roads are no longer maintained. And riding along kind of grassy areas along over cliffs up in the northwest cape and stuff. And it was really fun. And then we went to Ile de la Madeleine for a couple of days. And yeah. So that was, I think, probably the first time that we actually headed off on a bike trip.
Yeah. Because our big trips were generally canoeing. So.
Yeah.
But then.
So I don't know when that was. It was probably early 90s. Yeah.
And then that's just never ended. Just constant adventure. I love paddling, you know. And I said this too when I was talking to someone the other day on a podcast. It's just like I so took Ontario for granted when I lived there. Like, yeah, I'm from Deep River, right? So I could go down to the river and like just look across, and it's nothing. There's nothing over there, right? But I never felt the draw to go and explore my own area as a teenager. I was a bit of a skateboarder. I rode mountain bikes a little bit, but when I look back now, and especially after talking with, you know, with you over the past few months and Matt and you know, Cam Dubé and Ben Shillington and it's just, Ontario is just, it's just full of adventure, right?
Yeah.
Tons of places you can go.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, you know, what motivated us to put this route down was that there is an awful lot right here. And it's a little bit like when a park is created and it's colored green, people will tend to go there to look at it because it's a park. And so by highlighting a route through some really cool areas, great terrain, we're kind of like, here's something you could explore. You don't have to go down this route. It's only a suggestion, but all of a sudden it makes it apparent that somebody else at least has found this interesting, and so maybe other people will go and look at it.
And what I think so awesome about the bikepacking initiative and all these endurance races is that, like I was talking to a dude the other day just in the store, and he's like, where can I get to if I go up this road? And I'm like, oh my God, dude, where can't you get to? It's like, you know, you can basically, I could ride for maybe a kilometer and get on gravel, and I could ride from my house to Merritt, BC, which would be like, you know, 1,300-1,400 K from here. And I might be on the road for 100 of that. Right. Like, so if you go on Ride with GPS or just search the internet, you can find all these routes, and then you can just cobble something together. And man, I could probably ride to the island and like 80-90% off road, and then ride the entire Vancouver Island, like almost all off road, right to the northern tip.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Ontario, it's so vast. Like, it's just so, so vast. And yeah, so with all you guys out there planning these routes and making them available online, it's incredible. The resources are amazing.
Yeah. And we really, we're so fortunate to be, right on the border of Quebec, and the, you know, the Ottawa Valley is really, two sides of the river are so different. And, so we go north from here, and it's so entirely different than going south. There's enormous diversity in a very accessible distance from the nation's capital.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So when did you guys start? Like, what was your first route you planned?
The Long Driver's
Waltz. Long Driver's Waltz.
It is.
Well, yeah. That said, we always plan when we go out for a trip.
We've planned routes for sure, all kinds of routes. But we, it was our first experience to develop a route was the Log Driver's Waltz.
Full disclosure: the first time I ever turned on a GPS machine to follow a route was when we got to the Kissing Bridge on the BT-700. We rode there from Guelph, got to the Kissing Bridge. I turned on the GPS, and it said route found, and then we followed it for the next 9 days as we did the BT-700.
What was that, just a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was our first experience of following somebody else's route and what a GPS route really is, with all of the points of interest and all of the curating of a route presented shared with a wide audience and offered out for people to ride. And
since then it's become a bit of an addiction, though.
Yeah.
It's
fun.
You can't go anywhere without, even today, we just decided to go on a tandem route ride after we talked to you. And so we've got a little route, taken from a little bit from last spring, a little bit from this spring, and just sort of, we're going to go out and head south and town and down along the Rideau and stuff.
Oh, it sounds lovely. It's amazing how much technology has injected itself into everything that we do, right?
I was talking to
Matt Bain, a sports psychologist, and we were talking about the Whoop and the GPSs and blah 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 blah. It's like he called it very postmodern, right? It's like just the way we've kind of evolved into, the way we navigate through the woods, we're always counting on electronics to kind of get us there. It's a brave new world. I think it's great. And I think it also opens up terrain to people as well, right? Like people who might be, I don't know how to get there or where to go when I'm there. And it's like, now you can just whip out your phone and bring up Trail Forks or bring up Ride with GPS or bring up whatever app you have and just, I'm in this town, where should I ride? It's like here, right here, it's pretty amazing.
The interesting thing though is that we've done the majority of our riding using paper maps over the years, and we still go to a couple of old maps that are held together with packing tape, and the Backroads Atlas, and we'll tend to look at those quite a bit before we go to the digital. Although I'm starting to just go to the digital and then backtrack and look at the maps a little bit more and more. But Jen will always pull out the paper map. And I think what it does is it gives you a general idea of where you are. I like a much broader picture in space of where you are. You're not on a track or you're not following this little line. Because I think people don't sometimes, I encountered this, I've met people who didn't actually know where they were between Toronto and Ottawa. I'm following my GPS, it's like you're in a car. Yeah. But, the thing is that's really, that having a sense of geographical space is important. This route is a loop. And it's right around, so you can figure out where you are most of the time.
For route planning, we're still at the stage where I piece together the map in hard copy and planning out distances, how far we'll where we're going to need to stay.
to me, it's much easier to look at a hard copy map maybe someday, I love the online map tools, but they don't give me that ease of piecing things together, in a broader way.
I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people are still, especially experienced people who are kind of used to doing that. And that makes sense to me. I mean, I don't use paper maps, but I know I use mapping on my phone to give me that broad. And then when I need more, that's incorrect. Actually, I usually use my GPS for living on the line and whatnot. And then I use the map on my phone to get that broad picture and also to give me way more granularity. Cause I just run an Etrex 30X and it's clunky and kludgy. And it's like when you're trying to navigate or you're trying to zoom in to something to see, it's just like zoom in and you wait for it to render and so zoom in, wait again. It's just like, I can just whip my phone out and go whoosh, zoom in. Okay. Where are the bike shops? Where's the gas station? You know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I don't think you're alone in that. I think too, that's just it's that tactility of using a paper map, just like reading books, right? Like I listen to all my books. I don't have time to sit and read a book. And if I did, I'd get two sentences in and get bored or fall asleep. So I just listen to books, but people look at me, I was like, you're crazy. You gotta smell the book and feel the book. And it's like, I don't takes up space and cuts a tree down. And I don't need that.
Yeah,
I do appreciate it though.
Jen is actually quite keen to make a paper map of our route, like a proper map. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that will, for some people, that's just going to open it up to them. You know, I can see it now. I can feel it.
When we were developing the route and riding it for the first time, I took we have this Backroads Atlas that has really detailed maps of the area, but it doesn't cover, it's for Ontario, and it didn't cover the whole route. And each page would only cover a section of it. So I ended up making a paper map for our when we rode the whole route for the first time. I pieced together this whole map and it really was it was a tool that we used along the way. Of course we were using our phones and the GPS predominantly, but it was a big part. It was an important tool when we did our route.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would dig to have that map. That sounds like a good side hustle to me. Like you could basically no, I mean that in a good way. Like you could produce that at home, and you could get that printed locally from a print shop, and even get it like waterproof. They might even do stuff like that, right? And then you could make that available to people for a few bucks.
Yeah, we've got a great store in Ottawa. The World of Maps is a real resource for people who like maps, and they will definitely be a resource to develop.
They have water resistant ink on waterproof paper. Yeah. I found out water resistant ink after I left it wet, and it ran, and then I went back and he said, yeah, it's the ink, the paper's water. But anyway,
it's like, damn, where did that waypoint go? It's like this big black smear on your. So when you guys developed the route, did you go and ride it in one go?
Well, we rode sections of it, tons and tons of sections of it last spring. It was like every weekend was, oh, let's go ride this section. And we rode the whole thing
in July.
In
July we put the whole thing together.
I did a trip of the whole thing.
But the route really came about from a whole bunch of 3 and 4 day trips that we've done over long weekends, if you can sort of imagine a pizza, and it's got like two sides and then the outer perimeter. And we did a lot of, we almost always ride from home. So we would ride out along, you know, from the center of the pizza, and then we'd ride a little bit along the perimeter, and then we'd ride back. So we'd make a slice. So we have all these slices. So when we made the route, we just took all the outside of a whole bunch of slices and stitched them all together to make a big circle. And so most of the route was the outside of that pizza, and we had never ridden it contiguously or as one whole piece before, one whole continuous loop before.
But you did.
And then there were bits and pieces that we added in, got added in to that outside loop just to make it a little bit more interesting as the route development went on. So.
Would you say the motivation for building the route was to showcase cycling in Ontario and Quebec and Eastern Canada?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Yeah. To give people a chance to ride an extended route around Ottawa in through all of the different landscapes that are within basically 100 kilometers of center town.
Yeah. Might be like, I think the furthest point would be Charlotte Lake. It was an hour and 15 minutes drive. That would probably also be same with Gracefield. So everything is within a not too great distance in terms of car travel, but when you're out there, you don't know that you're near a city.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't look like you're near a city very often, actually. Like when you cross over to the Quebec side, it seems to me there's not a lot on that side, really, until you cross the river again. Are there, like, what are some of the small towns, if any, that there are on that Quebec side of the route?
Shawville. So Shawville's got a really good campground and a good shawarma place. We know that. Ladysmith is a crossroads, but it's got...
It's tiny.
It's got food. Kazabazawa, Gracefield. But these are all small places. And a lot of the places in Lanark County are place names now. I mean, there's yeah. It's just a name on the map. It's not even, it used to be a railway station,
yeah.
Flower Station.
Lac Saint-Marie is not very big. And Wakefield is probably the biggest, other than Gatineau. We go through Gatineau.
Yeah, no, it's actually pretty remote, and there's a lot of places where the cell phone service is non-existent. The North Frontenac Highlands, not only you're in rugged terrain and you're without cell phone, and Lac Saint-Marie or Mont Saint-Marie area, you can be without cell phone service as well. And in between Ladysmith and Kazabazawa, same deal. So, yeah, you have to be a little bit self-reliant. It's not a novice course.
Yeah, we stitched it together, aiming to be on the back roads, and including we brought the route to the biggest communities along the way, in order for people to be able to access the services along the route, because it's 800 kilometers long, and we set it out, around the main communities that are in those areas that we take the route through.
Also, with some of the thought of, like, cyclists spend money, right? Like whenever a cyclist stops somewhere, they're going to plunk down like 15 or 20 bucks on high calorie foods and
food and beer.
Yeah. Yeah, and
coffee. So
a lot of these little places, you know, they can use the injection of some tourism, right? Or, you know, it's just assisting. It's, I mean, it's not really much, but it's cyclists tend to spend, you know, more days in an area than somebody in a car.
And the shops do like them. Like the Eric stopped for coffee. There's a wonderful coffee shop on the route just south of Ottawa in Stittsville, and Quitters and the owner was saying, yeah, I love cyclists. They come and they eat well, they drink well, and then they're on their way.
That was always kind of the my stance on why any town should build an industry around cycling, is because all we want to do is come into your town. We want to ride bikes all day. And then we want to eat a bunch of food, like way too much food, and maybe some beer. And then we want to sleep, right? Yeah. We're not going to go to the club and party and break the bus shelter on our way back to the hotel, right? We just want to ride bikes, eat, and sleep. That's all we want. We're the perfect tourist. We're the perfect tourist.
Yeah, it's true. I think in a lot of ways it's it's quite interesting. Just on Instagram, Pontiac County Tourism and Ontario Highlands, like they're actually liking our posts and commenting on them and stuff. I mean, they say, it's like, that's cool. So I think there's an understanding that, I mean, and we're not financially invested in this. Like it's a volunteer thing, but
labor of love.
It's costing us, in fact. But the thing is that it is kind of neat to see people saying, "Yeah, this is good for where I live," and it's kind of neat to see people come and visit. Yeah.
Well, if the BT 700 is giving anyone any glimpse of the last couple of years of how it can affect small communities, right? It seems like just from, I mean, I'm way over here on the West Coast, but from what I've seen on social networking and from talking to yourself and Matt and again, the other Ontario bike packing folk, is that the small towns are just, they love it. They just love this influx. And the fact that they're promoting it in certain towns, like making people aware of the route, it just means growth, right? It's going to grow more and more, and these little towns can hopefully monetize on that a little bit and help feed their families and maybe, you know, just profit off of it, you know, profit off the tourism of that. And cause you know, we're traveling such long distances between little towns. We're just taking our dollars and we're just like spreading it all over the place, you know? So any little town should be looking at cycling or promoting bike packing, I think.
Yeah. And we're pretty ideal too, in the sense, I say cyclists or bike packers, is we can't carry a lot. So we have to spend money everywhere. I mean, it's like we're not hitting the Costco, filling up the shopping cart and never hitting another grocery store for 2 months. Where it's every grocery store we hit, we tend to stop it.
Yeah. Buy way too much and eat half of it and then pack the rest on the bike. That's awesome. Yeah,
can I eat right now? Oh no, that was too many.
What do you guys, what's your food kind of system? Like, do you guys you like cooking on the fly, or do you kind of go cold soak, or what do you guys do?
Oh, we cook. We love to buy breakfast, a second breakfast, but we have a full on breakfast that we'll cook up, and it depends on where we are.
Yeah.
But we do like to bring a lot of the route is so remote, you have to be able to cook, or well.
Have something.
You have to be able to feed yourself for dinners and breakfasts.
We tend to carry things like very nut-rich oatmeal for breakfast. And so we'll, when we leave home, we'll pack a few days of that just because we can eat it anytime. And then whatever we can really find in a grocery store that only really requires hot water. Because we use a little alcohol stove and a pretty small pot. And so we're not getting into three course meals or whatever. But then when we're in some place where there is a really good shawarma place, or you know, we pass a chip stand or something.
they don't have chip trucks out here. When I first moved here, I was like, where's the chip truck? And they're like, what's a chip truck? Yeah. It's like Deep River had the greasiest, dirtiest looking truck. And we'd go there, like, you know, on our break, lunch break from school or whatever. And it's a total Eastern thing, you know, like to be able to go and just get a greasy bag of chips with lots of salt and vinegar on it.
Yeah. No, that's really it's what you need, you know, like we like going into those places where if you were driving to them, the portions would be too large.
Truck stops. Got to find a truck stop en route.
Something like that, you know. So we're opportunistic when it comes to our food. Whatever we see, we're probably going to stop and get some just in case.
But if we're packing from home, we usually pack at least an extra day of food to have, and it's super light stuff that you know, instant potatoes or rice and some dried meat and dried vegetables that can just be rehydrated.
I've gone stoveless. If I bring a stove, it's to make coffee. And a lot of times I'll actually forego that and I'll just go synthetic. I'll go like caffeine noon tabs or caffeine tablet just to go really light.
Yeah.
And then when I get to a town, I'll binge on coffee. Like I'll double fist coffee and if I need to, but I find it, I'm a charcuterie guy. It's just all just meat, cheese, nuts, it dry, cold food. And I often sit around and if I'm camping with other people, I'll sit and watch them prepare their food. And it just looks like so much work. I'll just put a bunch of freezer bags out and just chaw on whatever I have available and watch them, do their food prep. But I find too, it's just the amount of, the work and water to prepare and then clean all the utensils and tools. So I've taken a different stance on, I don't cook. I won't bother cooking anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think you do. You tend to go with a destination. Like you tend to ride longer and harder. And
it's the only time I have. The only time I have to go on bikepacking trips or races. Basically, I went on a Kaz trip last summer, and we were still pulling off like over 100K days in the Rockies, right? And then, but it was so deluxe. It's like, oh, we're not in a hurry. We kind of stop whenever we want. It's like, it was so chill and casual. And I'm not used to that. And it's just my lifestyle right now. I just, you know, I'm doing the BC Epic next month at the end of the month there. And it's just like, I can't wait. 'Cause it's a trip, right? Albeit a fast trip.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing that we've noticed is that there's two distinct groups of people that are interested in riding the route. There's people that want to ride it in under 3.5 days because that's the current fastest time.
Who set that time? I was going to ask actually.
Norm Cowan is a local rider here.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there's the people that want to ride it in a relaxed manner. So actually, on our because we can't have a grand depart this year, we just really thought that it wasn't going to be feasible with COVID, and I think it's sort of turning out that way. I put up these things called petit depart, so you can ride whenever you want. But I sort of ask people, go and sign up for a month. Like, which month are you going to go in? And I also ask them, like, how are you going to approach it? Like, fast as you can, or fast for you, or fast for the course, or in a relaxed manner? And it's almost always one or the other. It's not like, oh, I'm going to try to do a medium pace. It's like, I'm either going to do it relaxed, or I'm going full bore. So it's, I think that's an interesting dichotomy in the bike packing community as well. Like, it's like, oh, I'm going to ride from here to the tip of South Africa as fast as possible, or I am going to, I'm going to spend the next 10 days riding to the Gaspé or Quebec City or something, you know, and just take it in.
Well, I remember talking to Leonard Pretorius after the first time I scratched on the AR, and I kind of said, I don't know if I'm a racer, man. I don't know if I just have it in me. And he was saying, cause he's fast, he's a fast dude. He was just saying that, I often think about how much stuff we miss when we're riding so fast, like trying to race these tracks. And he's right. Because when I hear some people talk about, say the BC Epic specifically, they're like, oh, remember the blah, 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 the lookout at the whatever. And I'm like, man, it's a blur. It's all a blur to me. I remember the places I stopped to eat, you know, and I remember the places I slept. And then oftentimes, especially if you're riding through the night, you could miss like 100 kilometers of that route because you're just in the dark following your tunnel, the green tunnel through the woods. Right. So yeah. I'd like to go back and experience that at a slower pace at some point to really, really enjoy it. I enjoy it, you know, either way.
It's just a different experience, different enjoyment. You have memories of the intensity that we'll always have. It's all fun.
It is all fun. It'd just be nice to come home after one of those trips and just be like, oh, what a great trip that was, and not have to spend 2 weeks recovering and putting band-aids on my ass, right, from wearing it out. So if people want to tackle this route, do you have a specific place you think they should start? Or obviously, it's a ring, so you could start wherever you want. But is there something in your experience, like, you would say, you know what, if you're going to do it and really experience it, start here and ride it in this direction? Or,
well, I would say it is kind of designed to ride in a clockwise direction. Okay. I haven't thought of riding it backwards. I mean, I suppose that's always an option. You can do that with ride with GPS. You just reverse the route. It wouldn't. It depends. If you're from Ottawa, I would say ride from Ottawa. If you're from Gatineau, I'd say ride from Gatineau. I'd say if you live anywhere along the route, just start where you are. Yeah. And if you're coming from far away, and you know somebody in Ottawa, then you could park there, I guess. But one of the main things was for parking, it's just easier to start out in Elmont.
And with a grand depart in mind, off in the future, the nominal starting point is Elmont.
Right.
The kilometer one is along the way from Elmont.
Okay. The Sipitan Club there, you know, it's like the Kiwanis, the Sipitans, they have a hall out there, and they have a parking lot. And they've been kind enough to let us park there. For people that are riding the route. So that sort of solves a lot of, you know, logistical problems. And the other thing about that is that you're very soon onto quiet dirt roads, gravel roads. If we had a mass depart or a grand depart in Ottawa, you would be running down tourists and other people sharing the multiple-use pathway. So it just wouldn't fly very well.
Before it spaces out.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's okay a week down the road or 4 days down the road. It's, you know, the odd bike coming through sort of thing. But we don't want to have like a number, you know, I don't know how many people will show up, but probably 60 or 100 or whatever.
I would say, how many people are showing up for the BT now? It's like over 100, right?
Yeah, I think got 60 the first year and 100 people signed up for last year. So, I mean, we have 23 or 24 that have signed up and there's no master part, no grand apart, right? Yeah. So it's, I think people are also this year particularly are really in a wait and see mode. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not making any plans as to when we're going to ride it. We don't know.
And especially, I guess, with the uncertainty of the Ontario-Quebec border, right? Like, they're encouraging people to not travel cross-border, correct?
Closed right now. So.
Oh, it is. Are they patrolling that? Do they actually sit there and patrol?
The
bridges.
Yeah. The bridges.
Wow. Yeah. So if you're driving from Ottawa into Gatineau, when you get to the other side, there's going to be a control point?
It's actually more the Ontario side, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Ontario that closed it. This time last year, it was Quebec that closed it.
Right.
But this time it's Ontario. But the other thing is that and the provincial government in Ontario has also made it illegal to camp on Crown land at the moment. They really don't want people traveling to go camping. Mm-hmm. So they don't camp on Crown land. So that coupled with the fact that there's no hotels or motels or private campgrounds really does make it impossible right now. Like totally impossible.
You can stealth, I guess. You're kind of taking a risk. I mean, it depends where you sleep, where you want to sleep and how comfortable you want to be, but I'm sure you could find a, I'm not encouraging it.
Yeah, but
I'm not encouraging anyone to break the law.
I would never counsel anybody to do that.
No.
You know, I mean, that's.
and the route, the route is very much all on public lands, and it avoids a lot of our scouting was to really ground truth some of the routes that are commonly used, but go through private property, and so we take the route on public lands and because it's a route that's out there, and it's for everybody to ride. It's all fair game.
That's good to know. Yeah, there's nothing worse than feeling sneaky if you're like climbing over a fence or something. No one wants that.
Yeah. Had some interesting conversations with, at least one interesting conversation with a landowner who was closing off a road that had traditionally been open and they had decided, no, this was their road and they were going to close it off. And so had a great conversation with them, and it was unfortunate. We think it cut out a nice little chunk of off-road, and then really kind of cool old historical road, a lot of old barns and that, but it was just better not to force the issue, because I think probably it was one of those things where I'm not going to go and make the local population upset with us by
Yeah, and there could be lashback over that. I think it's kind of lame. I always feel like animosity towards landowners who own like thousands and thousands of acres of land, and they won't let the public kind of just cross a small corner of it. I understand there's some liability issue, I suppose, but I mean, personally, it would never occur to me to like fall off my bike and then seek out the landowner to like try to make them pay for me falling down and breaking my leg or something. It's an interesting, it's a complicated issue.
Yeah. And that's you. And maybe somebody else would, exactly. Or maybe, you know, like,
but also when you think of like, let's just the Tour Divide specifically, cause you know, the hordes of people that ride that every year, I don't think there's ever been an issue where anyone's gotten injured and come back towards, onto Matthew Lee just seeking compensation for an injury they sustained while volunteering to ride a 4,000 kilometer route as fast as I can. You know, it seems counterintuitive to me, but I still respect that. I mean, we have those issues here as well. We've got a big chunk of private land, and I kind of had some words with the super about it as well. And he asked me, he was like, well, if you had 3,000 acres, would you let people on it? And I'm like, yeah, I would. I didn't even think about it. I said, yeah, I would. I totally would. I wouldn't hesitate. In fact, I'd be a trail angel and I'd put a big Coke machine out there somewhere in the woods on a generator. Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, is that an issue in Ontario? Like, it's here in BC that, I mean, we're so condensed and compact. Like, there is a lot of private land. Is Ontario littered with private lots of land that make planning routes logistically difficult?
Yes, I would say there are a lot of there's a lot of land that is signed private trespassing. I think perhaps now even more after last summer, with everybody heading out and looking for places to go, that a lot of landowners have, you know, felt like, geez, I don't really want to be overrun by hordes of people from the city, so I'm going to sign my property. But the Back Roads Atlas has got, it shows where there's crown land. I mean, it doesn't guarantee, it's pretty, but there's a lot of good crown land camping along the way. The rail trails all have picnic areas, but none of them have no camping signs on them. So there's, you know, there's places to camp, and then there's private campgrounds, and some people are more comfortable just also, as you say, have that comfort level of, okay, it's getting dark, I'll just pull off into this ditch here and have a nap, you know, and so, you know, I suppose that's fairly innocuous, right?
Not yeah, hurting other people. I think that's the thing that makes it, it gives you that sense of freedom, is that, you know, you're so self-contained, you could just pull out and sleep in a ditch if you wanted to. Like, I've slept in weird places, like just, and wake up in the morning, I was like, oh shit, I didn't know I was here. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But, what's your favorite part of the route? What's your favorite segment?
Did
someone ask you that before?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Since the last time we were asked that question, I thought about it a little bit in terms of, if I had to actually pick a spot that was my favorite, I'd say that one of my favorite spots is the North Frontenac Highlands. And part of it is because you're out of cell service for quite some time. You're going through some mature white forest, white pine forest, and there's some great lakes for camping up there. And when you get to the end of it, you climb this little hill called Tatty Hill. There's a road called the Tatty Hill Road, and you climb this little hill, which actually is a short, punchy little thing that takes it out of you. But when you get to the top of it, you are looking basically north, and you've got a farm to your left and trees to your right, and you're looking straight over at the Gatineau Hills. And there you are in Calabogie, looking at the Gatineau Hills, where you're going to be in, you know, well, it depends who you are, but for us, a couple of days, right? A couple of days ride away, and you can see it on a clear day, obviously. So that's one of my favorite spots. I just for the sake of choosing one.
Yeah, I know. It's like, there's so many. I mean, there's so many spots along 800 kilometer route. I know it's a pretty broad question. What about you, Jen?
Yeah. When we were talking about this last time, it was more a point along the route where we get into the rhythm of a trip. And on an 800 kilometer trip, it's, you know, you kind of start with some trepidation that, wow, this is, you know, we got a long way in front of us. And, but then when you get into, it's that time into the trip where you get that rhythm of being on a big adventure, an extended trip, is just a really great feeling. And so couple times, you know, the couple places wrote the route really come to mind, in where you can, as Eric said, where you can see where you've come from, like some of the high points where you see where you've come from, and then off in the distance you see where you're going to be in a couple days, because our route is not an A to B route. It's not a nice circle around Ottawa. It's 800 kilometers some circuitous kind of routes through some of the more beautiful roads and back roads. So, you know, along the route, when we've come through so many different places, and then coming into Wakefield, it's super fun, you know, knowing that we're going to get to ride through the Gatineau Park, like one end of the park to the other, is just, it's a really great feeling. So it's not necessarily a spot on the map, but
it's a feeling. An emotion, right? I can relate to that. It'd be so cool to be, I mean, we have that experience here. If we get up higher into the Alpine, you can just kind of look around and you can survey kind of the area where you've come through or where you're going. And in Ontario, I mean, no diss, but there's what's the highest point of that route?
Well, I can tell you where it is. There's two climbs, and they're exact same height. One of them is just after Lac Saint Marie, and it's on a what's called the Trans-Outaouais route, which was I think it was the government of Quebec decided that we're going to join communities through the backwoods, and it's tough. It's actually a fairly tough climb, so I don't know its exact height. But I do know that, like, on a gravel bike with no load, it sort of took me 8.5 minutes. So it's usually just being graded, and it's sort of it's not gravel; it's sort of rocks and chunks and stuff. So
there's a lot of elevation gain, actually. I should have looked. I should have punched it up. But the total route, 794 with 7,100 meters of elevation gain. That's nothing to scoff at. The BC Epic is 1,000 K, and it's 10,000 meters. So it's really not that far off. So it's interesting, right? Is it just constantly So that's difficult. That's difficult to do day to day, hour by hour.
It crosses a lot of rivers. Of course, you go back and forth over the Ottawa River, but it crosses some significant tributaries to the Ottawa, and so you go down one into one valley and climb up out of it, and then down into another. You know, the Mississippi, the Madawaska.
It's funny. I'm looking at the elevation profile. It's just like, it's like up, down, up, down, 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 for like 800K, where, you know, the BC Epic is like 3% for like 60K, 3% for 60K. It's like these big, vast. And then at the very end, there's a big right at the very end where you get probably 25% of your elevation. That's tough. That's like the AR 700, where people say it's really difficult because you're just constantly like you're being tortured like every few minutes with a steep climb and then a great downhill, but a short one. So you're like never really getting fully recovered, kind of thing.
There's a lot of, like, I like climbing, so
I don't mind either.
But looked for it in a lot of ways, like, you know,
the climbing makes it interesting.
It's when you're spending hours in the saddle on flat, right? It's so boring. Like, it's just,
We have around Ottawa, we have these long, wonderful rail trails that are incorporated in the route, but we only incorporate sections of them because sitting on a rail trail for
80K or something,
as long as you can, is not as interesting as deking off of it and riding rain and then jumping back on it when it makes sense.
They make good alternates though. Like if people are in there and they are getting kind of getting just punched, or they can just kind of bail out onto a rail grade.
Yeah.
So that part that I described as my favorite part, like going through the North Frontenac Highlands and then Toddy Hill, you could conceivably bypass that whole entire section and just stay on the KMP trail between Charbot Lake and Calabogie, which is, you know, we've done that before too, you know, and you can, well, we have ridden it on 28 C tires. I wouldn't really recommend it, but those used to be big tires for us. You know, so there are ways to there are ways to take chunks out and not do some of that elevation and that climbing. Of course, the actual thing that particular rail trail is quite like it, right? It's wilderness around you, so it's quite nice.
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful route. I was saying to Ben on our podcast yesterday that I really want to get out there. Our family, we're talking about, we can't afford to fly to see grandma and grandpa, but we're thinking of maybe road tripping, getting in the car and road tripping and saying I'm going to have to bring my bike and see if I can get away for under 3.5 days. I doubt it. I doubt that. But no, I like that because that's kind of my time goal for the BC Epic is to do it 3.5 days. I don't know. That's a long way, man. When I'm looking at the route on here and knowing the valley and knowing the area and looking at the elevation, 3.5 days is respectable. Respect to that dude, especially with all the constant undulating through the terrain. Yeah.
Yeah. And the surface that it's predominantly gravel and trail. There, the amount of actual pavement on it is pretty minimal. So it's definitely slower going on gravel than on the paved sections.
One guy said to us, well, you just use pavement to stitch together the gravel. And it's like, yeah, it's true.
if you have to,
but I mean, you know, you talk about tire. Well, you were mentioning about tire size earlier and so on. And, you know, when we ride it without a load or anything, we're happy to take a cross bike with 40C tires or something. But for a loaded bike, the 2 or 2.5 inch is sort of the 2.1 inch tires are sort of the optimum, we think. I'm sure there would be people that will go off this summer and ride it on 37s or whatever. And you could. You could do whatever you want to do.
Do it on a cross bike if you want, fully loaded.
It's the comfort, right? Like, okay, I'm not chattering around. And some of the bouldery, more chunkier bits, you do want to have a bigger tire because, like, you don't want to fall off too much, right?
Not too much. Yeah, just a little bit. Just fall off a little bit. If people want to find more information about this awesome route, where should they go?
A website called logdriverswaltz.ca, and also Instagram, so the Log Drivers Waltz or at the Log Drivers Waltz. But that's the Instagram and Facebook are both on the Log Drivers Waltz website, logdriverswaltz.ca. Or if you put in .com, you'll also get .ca, so don't worry.
And Facebook page, Log Drivers Waltz.
Right. Hashtag or at LDW bike packing.
Cool. But could this be integrated with the BT as well and some of those other routes that are kind of down in that area?
Well, we're quite far away from the BT, but AD has put together a route called the Hasty Highlander, and he's been I think he personally and probably some other people are thinking, oh, well, we'll do the Hasty Highlander and the Log Driver's Waltz all together and make it like, I don't know, 1,800 or 2,000 K or something. It's there. So, yeah, I mean, you could go now from southern Ontario all the way to here, pretty much by bike packing route. And then there's bikepacking.qc. They're putting together a route that's going to go from here all the way to the Gaspé.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, so theirs is more linear, but they scouted out a bunch of it last year. So, I mean, really the sky's the limit. As you said earlier, you know, you can go out your back door, get onto a road and end up, you know, 1400 kilometers away. Yeah. And so, yeah.
And this cross Quebec thing is, they're crowdsourcing the sections to take people to fill in the blanks across the province.
That's the way to do it, because I'm sure you guys can attest how much work it is, you know, time on maps and computers mapping out routes. It'd be nice to be able to just, hey, just tell me how to get from here to here and have everyone just kind of pile it in, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, Matthew is like, he was our mentor and really, as I said, we were new at this and he really guided us and pushed us and proposed alternate routes that we hadn't thought of before. And so that was really fun, like working like that. And I think, well, a couple of things. I think the route came out faster than if we had been doing it. Another fellow, Adrian Grant, who does ridegravel.ca. So he made suggestions and that we incorporated. And, you know, so yeah, you're right. Like it's like there's so many options and there's so many possible ways of doing it that if you're kind of going off and like living in a silo, it might not be as interesting as if you collaborate with people, you know. So, you know, we learned a ton doing this one and we're thinking of others, but well, we got some other slightly shorter routes in the pipe. So for people to go out and do in 3 days or whatever. But we do have some shorter routes on the website as well, because that's another thing that happened is a bunch of people came up to us and said, I would like to try this, but I don't think I can do 800 kilometers.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at on your website now. So there's like the QEW is a shorty, yeah. Like 140. Yeah, so Fitzroy Harbor, there's lots of really great routes in here. Gatineau. Yeah, man. So, yeah, I'd encourage anyone, logdriverswaltz.ca, check out the routes if you're living in and around Ontario. And I think what you guys are doing with new routes and this route and what all the Ontario bikepacking crew are doing out there is just awesome. And it's just promoting such a great sport. And I know you put a lot of time in it and, you know, it's all volunteer time and you should put a Patreon donate link on your website. I'm serious, man. Cause it's like people appreciate this stuff. And, you know, if I come out there and you know, if I were to hire a guide to take me on something, it would be huge money, right? You're kind of doing all the work for everybody. So I'm sure I speak for all the bikepackers out there to just say thank you. Thank you for doing that and showing people the kind of cycling you can have in Ontario and that you don't have to go to BC, to the big mountains or even overseas to find good bikepacking trips because they're right here, right in our backyard, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Steve.
Yeah. That's awesome. So little, you know, like I think everybody wants to do the Tour Divide, right? Like so that's another thing. Okay. This is a potential training route for that. You know, maybe even if we decide to go do the Tour Divide someday, we're gaining experience here, learning what it's like. It's not going to be exactly the same, obviously, but, that sort of ride also inspired us to like, okay, let's do something here.
Yeah. And it inspires other people too. So, you know,
that's great. That's to say that. And, you know, I guess we could say right back at you.
Yeah.
for doing the, you know, for getting people on, and it's quite enjoyable to listen to the different people that you get onto your podcast, and you know, whether it's gear or you know, whatever it is, there's some of their psychology and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's a very cool community, and thanks for including us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for saying, thanks for the kind words. And it is a great community, you know, and it's tight. It's super tight. And it's important that we just give everyone a platform to talk about kind of what they're up to, and kind of adds a little bit of a more personal dimension to the social networking thing. So yeah, I thank you for your time today. Did you talk about everything you wanted to? Is there anything you wanted to go over?
Yeah, no, I think we did. I you know, like when you talk about that small community thing, it's like there's a lot of people. When I started going through our followers list on Instagram and realized, oh, you're interviewing these people and they're following our route, and it's like, oh man, that's pretty cool.
it's just giving exposure, right? It's exposing everyone to everybody else. It's good. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah, we really look forward to seeing. Some people come from far away to be able to do this when we can travel, and having that that sort of mass of people come and congregate in a parking lot and then all ride off together. I don't know. I think I'll probably cry a little bit.
Have you ever done a Grand Depart? Have you been involved in one?
Not on biking, no.
It's really
a marathon where you have like 300 or 400 people skiing off in the dark.
So yeah, I know you've felt it. You've felt the energy. Yeah. It's an interesting energy, like to get together, because everyone's kind of nervous and everyone's like, especially if it's in a racing environment, everyone's checking each other out. And it's fun, but everyone's out there for the same reason. It doesn't matter if you're pointy end of the stick guy or a Lantern Rouge person, like everyone's out there for the same reason. And it's just to move through nature. Yeah. It's cathartic. Yeah. It's good for us.
And we look forward to, obviously, when you come back to visit the parents, that you'll be dropping in and maybe popping a cool one or something.
I will. I'd really love that. Love that. So thanks for your time again, guys, Eric and Jen.
Great to, great to meet you over the phone.
Yeah. Likewise. And we'll do it again. Okay.
Okay. Great. Take care.
Okay. Have a good rest of the day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye. All right, there you go. There you have it. Eric and Jen Betteridge of the Log Driver's Waltz. So I hope you enjoyed that chat. I don't know when this is going to come out. Maybe the day before or the day of my start of my, or maybe the morning of, I'll publish it. But wish me luck. Support me. Go to the MasakaCyclingClub.com/donate. Chip in a buck if you're hearing this, and share it with your friends. Share it around. Let's raise some money for the Masaka Cycling Club. I'd really appreciate you guys helping me out. And and send me support, send me messages, because I'm going to probably need the boost, even though I guess that might be against the rules of ultra endurance bike pack racing. I'm just going to try to ride it as fast as I can. And I really appreciate your support. So love you guys. And what else did I want to say? I want to just thank everybody. Thanks for listening. And if you dig what I'm laying down here in the podcast, then subscribe, share, rate, and review the podcast on your favorite listening platform. And also, if you want to support me, if you find value in the conversations I have and want to chip into the MyBack40 project, please do. You can do that at myback40.org/support. So yeah, I know that's not the focus of this right now, but, you know, kind of trying to make a living over here doing this thing as well. And for those of you who have chipped into the MyBack40 podcast, I so, so appreciate it. And, I love you guys. I love all you guys. And I hope you continue to enjoy the podcast. And I might be a bit late with the next one, doing the race. And then we're going out to the island to see, Grandma and Grandpa, which I'm super pumped about. I'm not even sure I'm going to bring a bike. But I am hoping to connect with some friends, and hopefully we'll get together and do that and have some beers. And so until then, wish me luck, and I'll see you on the other side. Keep the rubber side down.